Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday, January
Woohoo!
20th. Happy Football National Championship Day. Recording a little early tonight so we could all watch that, go watch that game. And other than Griggs is going to watch Hampton at North Carolina A&T on
Damn straight I
CBS.
am. That's what I'm watching.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. That's my cat, Laika, behind me. Got David Griggs and David Dorman up here. John Tytel and John Salica
The
below me
cat
here.
frightens me. I don't like the cat. It scares me.
Oh, you should be scared.
It's plotting right now.
Anyhow, this is our Hoops HD report, where we're going to go over anything and everything that's going on in the world of college basketball, I think, correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, hear me. I'm telling you, this is a great marketing idea, a television that turns itself off whenever you watch anything other than college basketball.
And the buzzer does work. Okay, let's get right to it here. We've got a lot to get through here. Some great games and a lot of top teams have suffered losses this weekend. But I'm going to go ahead and pull the screen share up and start where I think we start every week off in the SEC. First, congratulations to the Auburn Tigers, unanimous number one for the first time in school history, and deservedly so. And let's Dorman, let me start with you with this Auburn team. Took care of Mississippi State, squeezed out the win at Georgia this weekend, and here they are at 17-1, and it's hard to argue that they're not the best team in the nation.
They are the best team in the nation. They're doing this lately, the last two games, without their All-American front court player up front, Jahmy Broome, who is in, having a sensational year. He had a bad twisted ankle, so hopefully he's coming back soon. You saw him on the bench. Great. It just seems like a great kid. He was all over the bench, jumping up and down for his team. But Auburn, to me,
Hopefully he didn't twist his ankle again. All that jumping around.
They're playing great basketball. They're making up for him. Some guys off the bench that didn't play as much have stepped up in the front court, especially. But the guards and are hitting shots from three. And Pearl's got him playing great defense. I'm with the pollsters. Auburn is, to me, clear and clearly the top team in the country.
Well, if you look at these metrics, or if you wanted to pull them up, I mean, you see two in Ken Pomeroy, as low as three in the BPI. I think, is Auburn slipping a little bit here?
Yeah, there they are. In fact, if you want to see these team sheets, by the way, go up to that Hoops HD team sheet page up there. They're all updated. They're updated at least once a day. Brand new system that makes it load a lot quicker as well. But let's talk about a few other teams in this conference. And Tytel, Ole Miss had a great win last week at Alabama, though they followed up by with the loss of their rivalry game against Mississippi State over the weekend.
Stealing most of my thunder, but yes, Chad, you are
Oh,
correct.
sorry.
Any double-digit road win over Alabama is tier 1A plus plus, and then any loss to your arch rival in Stark Vegas in overtime is a dagger. Plenty of quad one opportunities ahead for everybody in this conference. Ole Miss will host A&M on Wednesday, and then a road trip to Mizzou on Saturday. Great perimeter defense, 29% allowed behind the arc is top 25 in the nation. And a lot of teams depend on either a McDonald's All-American or a Super Frosh who's a one-and-done guy. These Rebels are all about experience. Seven of their top eight scorers are seniors or grad students. And the upperclassman I'm keeping my eye on is Jamin Brakefield, starter for each of the past 3 years. But he takes one for the team this year, coming off the bench, still averaging 10 points and five boards a game.
You mentioned the loss of Mississippi State is a dagger. I think it's a dagger more to the ego than it is to the profile. I mean, if Mississippi State isn't unbeaten at home, I think they only have one loss. I just don't think that that's damaging. And when you look at this Ole Miss team, 8-1 at home. Their losses are to Purdue by two, at Mississippi State by three, and then they did get beaten like a drum out at Memphis. But the win at Alabama, the win at Louisville, the win at Arkansas—oh, wait, that one's not very good. But the wins at Alabama and Louisville—that is a hell of a profile. Is that not in any given year a slam dunk? Pardon the pun, protected seed profile all day long.
Yes, and to answer your question, the dagger is to the ego, not to the resume. I assure you, if Arizona loses to ASU, I don't care what ASU's record is, it's still a dagger.
The biggest problem Ole Miss has is look at the rest of this schedule. Your only break you get, I think, is a road trip to South Carolina. It's still an SEC road trip. So, I mean, this is ridiculous gauntlet here. Salika, though, one of the teams, the one team that they did beat this week was Alabama. But Alabama, fascinating, they follow up that home loss to Ole Miss with a road win at Kentucky.
Part of the SEC road win exchange program. Sure, losing to your next door neighbor Ole Miss is going to hurt a little bit, but any win in Lexington for the Tide is always going to be a boon right here.
Three wins against probable protected seeds all away from home. That is a ridiculous profile.
I count four there. Houston, yeah. Illinois, Kentucky, and A&M, Griggs.
You think A&M's going to get all the way up there? Yeah. I mean, well, then four.
well, Texas A&M currently ranked 13th in the polls, Dorman. I mean, you want to? We're going to throw them out already?
They're not even. They're only.
They lost to Kentucky
this
week.
Come on.
Beat LSU. They didn't do much, right?
Look at them, just 10th in the league. I mean,
stay 500 in the conference. You're going to this tournament, and you'll probably be wearing white. It's that tough of a conference, like you just pointed out, Chad. The next upcoming games at Ole Miss and at Texas, and Texas is one of those SEC teams on the bubble. So that's how hard the schedule is. It's not going to get any easier. Coach Buzz needs to, you know, go 500. Not make sure you win your games at home. If you can take one off on the road, one or two, you're doing great, and I think A&M's in really good shape, especially if they can get healthy this week. They have they're banged up. Wade is their superstar, has been out a few games.
Yeah, Tatel, I gotta ask you. I just pulled Tennessee up there on the right. They still only have two losses. They have some really good wins, but interesting loss at Vanderbilt. And is there any problems with Tennessee, who's kind of played with some of their weaker opponents, or? Is this actually like, you know, hey, Vanderbilt's good?
I believe Vandy beat him last year as well. So this is partially a rivalry game, partially Vandy's good. When's the last time a game against Vandy was tier one, for God's sake, Chad? Their metrics are great. Obviously, the schedule's brutal. And if you haven't circled that game against Auburn on January 25th, what are you waiting for? It's going to be possibly the SEC game of the year, and that is saying a lot.
Yes, it's saying a ton, given that almost every game is the game of the year in this conference. Yeah. But yeah, huge one coming up this weekend, Tennessee at Auburn.
Last Tuesday, I know we said this on last week's show, the SEC, and how many years have we been doing this, and how long have we been watching basketball before we even started doing this? There were three games on a regular Tuesday night between that featured top 15 teams, and all three were SEC games. That's ridiculous.
We may be getting that a few times this week as well, Griggs. I think we still got to address a couple more teams, though. Griggs, Missouri gets the win at Florida. And if you thought that maybe they weren't for real, maybe they are after they win at Florida, which is a place that Tennessee got blown out.
Yeah, so part of this is paper and part of this is eye test. And Mizzou early on was easy for me to write off. They went to Memphis and lost. I didn't, at the time that happened, it was the first night of the year. I didn't realize, I mean, I was still very questionable and critical of Memphis, so I just thought nothing of it. But, and then they went on a streak of winning a bunch of blah games. I mean, if you look at tier four there, Mizzou certainly spent their time at the pastry cart. So this is not me being a homer. I've been very critical of Missouri the whole year. Even after the big win over Kansas, I just chalked it up to an overly supercharged home rivalry game. But then they won at Florida, and then they went to Arkansas. And I know Arkansas is bad. They haven't won a conference game, I don't believe. But they just blew them off the floor.
That was a home game.
It was never close.
It was a home game. But this team has good paper, and they look good. You don't beat Kansas. You don't go to Florida and win. You don't win the types of games they won unless you're really good. And then all of a sudden, you look at the games they've lost. Auburn at Auburn. I don't think anybody can win at Auburn. There might be a team that's as good as Auburn, but none are good enough to beat Auburn on Auburn's floor. Nobody is. Illinois, protected seed, lost by three. And Memphis, very, very good road loss. Those are not bad losses at all. This is a damn good team.
Yeah, Dorman, you got a thought on them also?
I'm with Greg's. I thought this team was bottom of the SEC coming in. I think Gates has done a great job coaching this team. They run a really good offense and a lot of good movement. And like Greg said, they had Arkansas on what everyone thought would be a letdown after they went to Florida, went to Gainesville, and they came home and knocked Arkansas was down 20 before they knew what happened, and it never got close. I'm with Griggs. This Missouri team's solid.
I guess, you know, somebody's got to be bad in this conference. We know South Carolina's at 0-5, but I'll tell you real quick. Do we expect Arkansas to be 0-5 with John Calipari there?
It seems impossible, Chad. We're talking Hall of Fame coach, championship, like, and a good roster. It's not like he's got, like, three stars injured. He's got the hotshot freshman in Boogie Fland. He brought in Adu Thiarro from Kentucky. Like, he's got the big man, Z. Ivicic.
Great Wagner, stats like, there, Chad. Oh, sorry.
Tons of McDonald's All-Americans. It's just not working. The question is, how on earth did they beat Michigan last month?
All right. Well, coming up this week, tomorrow night, we got Vanderbilt at Alabama, Missouri at Texas, Mississippi State at Tennessee. Wednesday, we've got A&M at Ole Miss, Florida at South Carolina, Georgia. I'm just circling every single game once again. Really, really circle that Tennessee-Auburn game. But don't discount Ole Miss at Florida. Don't discount Georgia at Florida.
Kentucky going to Vanderbilt.
Ole Miss at Missouri.
Nuts.
Kentucky, Vanderbilt.
Texas, Texas A&M. The rebirth of the – I mean, I know that they started the series up a couple of years ago, but we got it back as a conference series. That one's going to be bonkers.
Yeah, I think we could probably –
judging by those
this.
Two games, I got to think Arkansas gets off the schneid right here.
this is their seven. Easiest stretch, Georgia and Oklahoma at home. Can't get easier than that. Yeah. Now, a very good Georgia team, though. A Georgia team moved on the field last night, though. So we could do about three more hours on the SEC tonight and any night. But let's go to a conference that may have just as many teams vying for NCAA tournament bids, but these teams may all be vying for the the bottom of the bracket, the 9, 10, 11, 12 seeds instead of the 1, 2, 3, and 4s. But over in the Big Ten, there's a couple stories. Dorman, maybe we need to start with Michigan State. Nice week with beat Penn State, yeah, but then that win over Illinois that they were able to pull out on Sunday. Now they're out to a 7-0 starting conference play, which you rarely ever see from an Izzo team.
You're right, Chad. Usually they struggle in the beginning and come on strong towards the end. But this team has come out strong right out of the gates in Big Ten play. Everyone was saying, well, the first four in the Big Ten were easy. They got a good schedule to start. Well, they came out yesterday against Illinois, who I think Illinois, Michigan State, Michigan are probably as good as anyone with Purdue up there. And it was a great game. Brad Underwood decided to go crazy with a minute left and get a technical. Definitely helped Izzo and the Spartans out there. But they play tough. They're strong. They're physical. And what something they're doing this year that I haven't seen, they're getting out and getting easier buckets on fast break. They're pushing the ball really fast, really strong when they have it. And they're getting good looks on the fast break. And I think this team's for real. I think Michigan State will be up there all year in the Big Ten.
I was going to say this in defense of Underwood. I think it was actually at the under four timeout when Michigan State was up four at the time. It seemed like Illinois initially responded, but that was a big hole for the Illini to climb out of. But still not as offensive as what Keith Dambrot did several years ago when the game was tied and he decided to go full ejection mode.
Yeah, that was something.
Tytel, how about Sparty's in-state mates there in Michigan? They did not quite have a very good week this week. Suffered a little bit of a tough trip to Minnesota.
So the good news for new coach Dusty May, he has won six of his past seven. The bad news, as Chad points out, the one loss at Minnesota last Thursday blew an 11-point second-half lead. They had most of this week off and then a huge game at Purdue on Friday. And as you might expect from a team that starts a pair of seven-footers, 61% shooting inside the arc, number three in the nation. As you might not expect, their big men are actually good outside shooters, so 38% behind the arc, top 35 in the nation. But their most amazing shooter is also their tallest shooter, 7-1 transfer Vladislav Golden. And after the big Russian did not even attempt a single three in 4 years at Texas Tech and FAU, he's made 9 of 16 this year. He's made at least one in four straight games, to which I say Goldin Zolotoy, or Golden is Golden in Russian.
There you go. All right, now we're going Russian. Stalika, I put up Purdue there on the left. They had a very nice week as well. They went to Oregon and picked up the road win. And you know, I think a lot of us did not think that Purdue was going to be where they were last year, but they're getting back there, aren't they?
Oregon's a little bit of a tough team to figure out. They'll be world beaters one day. They'll be losing at home by somewhat sizable margins to Illinois and the Boilers. But Purdue not missing a beat after Zach Edey moves on to the NBA. Hard to believe that they're still in second place with that record at 7-1, but they are very much a contention. And now they're going to be entering a stretch where they're going to be playing four out of their next five games at Mackey Arena. I could easily see that ballooning up to 12-1 right there.
Hey, Griggs, I gotta say, he's right about Oregon. You know, you've got to love this team. They are 8-0 away from home. Their problem has been at home.
Yeah, I mean they're the inverse of what's normal. Now, you know, sometimes it's hard to win when you've got trees on the court. So, yeah, and when they've lost at home, like you know, Illinois clobbers them at home. But look at them away from home. That's amazing. They're 8-0, like you said, one seed.
I guess there may be a few other teams to mention here. And Dorman, around the bubble, you know, we suddenly have kind of a group of teams here. Teams like Indiana and Iowa. You know, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, maybe Indiana is a team that's stepping up now after they picked up the win at Ohio State over the weekend.
That might have turned their season around. They really could have used that, and they got it. Yeah, Friday night, that was a huge win. But you're right, Chad. There's a lot of these Big Ten teams around the bubble. Northwestern, I would love to put in there. They had Michigan on the ropes yesterday in Ann Arbor, but they let them off. Rutgers, I keep waiting to get going. They need to go on a run. UCLA's been struggling. They need to get hot. So yeah, there are a lot of bubble Big Ten teams. So the next you know, 4 or 5 weeks are going to be huge there in that 9, 10, 11 slot, because the Big Ten looks to put a lot of teams in the tournament. They will, but who they're going to be is still up for grabs.
Can you pull up Indiana again real quick? I know you had them up there, Chad, but
Yep.
this is a team that kind of they always seem to be going in the opposite direction that I think they are. I did not believe in them coming into the year, was very vocal about that. I think they started off 13th, and you know, but then they had some big wins. But I don't know. You mentioned them turning it around. Before that, they lost by 25 in back-to-back games, and you had the, you know, fans chanting to fire the coach and walking out of the arena. Does this team have it in them to get inside the bubble, or are they just going to, you know, with three of their next four on the road, lose three of their next four, and then they're so far away from it, we're not even talking about them anymore?
I'll tell you one thing, Greg. In my opinion, when you look again at these teams that you're playing in the Big Ten, you lose three in a row, you don't suffer a bad loss, and then you suddenly you win a game at Wisconsin, or you win a game at Oregon, and you're right back there again.
Yeah, none of their losses were to bad teams. But oh my God, did they not? As Stolikas said the other night, they did not mess around in any of those losses.
I say at the end of the day, they do not make it.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Dorman, but I think if you pick it right now, they're probably going to Dayton for me, like I think we did last night. We sent them to Dayton.
Very fair.
UCLA, are they going to get it turned around? Because they've had moments of brilliance, but they've had hours of awfulness.
So UCLA has three real nice pieces at the top of the resume. So they got
Yeah.
more room, I think, to increase, in my opinion, at least, to play around a little bit.
Yeah.
But they got at Washington, at USC, coming up to the next three. They could really use a couple of those road wins.
Yeah.
Real quick, upcoming schedule this week. There's a lot of interesting games in this conference as well. I
Friday
don't know.
night, Michigan, Purdue.
Michigan Purdue Friday night is a huge one. We've got Michigan State and Rutgers. That game is going to be at Madison Square Garden, actually, not at the Rutgers Athletic
Huh.
Center, the RAC Stalika, as it is properly called. But a lot of interesting games here this week, all the way through next Monday night. UCLA at USC in a Big Ten showdown.
Yeah, the city game, lots of rich Big Ten history there.
Let's jump over to the Big East, and One of the most notable wins, and Tytel, let me start with you on this one. Probably the most notable win this weekend. Xavier goes to Marquette and shocks the and shocks them. What about the Xavier team? Did they suddenly come out of nowhere to get back into the picture with that win?
I'll try not to steal all of Stilica's thunder, but when a Bubblicious team gets a big-time road win in conference play, I call it a season saver, and that's exactly what Sean Miller did on Saturday. He built a 19-point second-half lead at Marquette and hung on for dear life, one by two, 12-7 overall. They beat Wake in November, which, as Chad is the first to admit, is aging very well. They have plenty of opportunities this month, next 3 years against the Johnnies, UConn, and Creighton. And they know how to shoot the ball. Top 30 in the nation from both one-point land and three-point land. And the key, of course, Big Frosty. No, not the golf cooler bag, the 6'9 forward, Zach Fremantle. All conference as a sophomore, NIT champ as a junior. Missed all of last year with an injury. Has bounced back this year, 17 points and 8 boards a game. He's shooting 51% from the field. Fun fact, to give you an idea of how old he is, the first time he beat UConn, which was November of 2019, it was a non-conference game because UConn was in the American.
Wow.
Yep, that was in Charleston. I remember that tournament.
Dorman, I think the team that made the biggest case for itself this week, though, might have been Creighton with their 2 wins, including winning at UConn. Shorthanded or not, they won at UConn.
They won at UConn, and like Tytel just said, season savers. There was two of them put up by Greg McDermott's Creighton Blue Jays. Huge. They really are playing well. They're starting to shoot the ball much better. They're getting healthy. Stephen Ashworth is a phenomenal shooter when he has space, especially, and when he's healthy. He seems to have his legs under him now. He's hitting shots. I think this Creighton team, who was off my board just a few weeks ago, is definitely on it as of today. And now I think the rest of the way they'll start to make their seed even stronger. But I agree with you. This Creighton team has hit, they're playing as well as they have all season long. So look for them to keep going here with the next few games. They get DePaul and Seton Hall before Xavier and Villanova. So I think Creighton will keep it going here. And I like this Blue Jays team.
Meanwhile, Griggs, with their losses, UConn, you've got them out of your field right now, correct? You don't even
Yeah,
belong.
all the way out. It like
Not even in the NIT, right?
yeah, of course not. Not, I mean, they've lost their last couple of games, and I know our good friend Zach Singer is watching. They went out to Maui, and they did not win a single game. Last place team.
Okay.
So all the way out
In
of the
all
field.
seriousness, Greg. So
Yeah.
let me pull up St. John's over here on the right. They're sitting
Yeah.
there at 7-1 in conference and 16-3 overall. And you know, the metrics like them. But when you dive deep into the resume, I don't see a team that I would put in the field today that they've beaten, other than I think I would have Bryanton right now as my America East champion.
Yeah, the win at Xavier is towing it. The win at there isn't much there. And then some of those wins they really had to battle for, like that win at Providence. The one thing I will say about the Johnnies is, while their profile, at least at least it doesn't top, at least where it tops out, it doesn't jump out at you that much. But you look at the games they've lost, you know, 3 to Georgia in double overtime, the Baylor, and then, you know, by 1 at Creighton. They're very close to not to being an undefeated team. And then if they were, they'd probably be ranked in the low teens or higher. So,
They would be, but with that non-conference strength of schedule 200, come on, come on,
yeah.
Patina, really.
Right. There are issues, but I do think that the schedule is backloaded. So, you know, they go to Connecticut. They have a game against Marquette coming up. A lot of their tougher games are still in front of them. So if they are good, we're going to find out between now and the end of the year. But if the season ends and their profile doesn't top out higher than what it is now, they're probably not in. I will say this, I think they're better than where their profile currently tops out. They just have, it's similar to Houston, although maybe a much more extreme case of it. They just haven't gotten the chance to win the games they need to show how good they really are yet, but they will.
Well, here's the upcoming schedule in the conference. Notable games, maybe Xavier, UConn at Xavier Saturday is one that we're really circling now,
Big, yeah.
after what's happened as we record this
Better
Georgetown
circle the one
Villanova
on Wednesday
when,
first
yeah.
because I hinted at this last night during the podcast. Xavier is in the midst of a brutal stretch right now. They've already got the win at Marquette. Now they got to go to MSG against St. John's, have a brief stop at home for UConn, and then they have to go to Creighton on the road before they finally get a conference bye. We're going to see right here if Xavier can get the quality, because we talk about St. John's being pretty backloaded. Xavier is extremely front-loaded on their conference schedule this year.
Xavier's the load is current. It's middle-loaded.
I'll tell you what, though, John. If Xavier goes 2-0 this week, I guarantee you next Sunday night when we do our bracket rundown, nobody's going to have any problem putting them in the field. It's very solidly probably at that point.
No, I do not like the matchup against St. John's, but I am confident about Saturday's game.
All right. There you go. You heard it. Xavier taking down UConn because UConn doesn't even belong in the field per Griggs.
Per me. Well,
Big 12 conference time.
Zach Singer. I mean, that's their biggest problem.
Let's start. Actually, Dorman, let's start with Iowa State first. They had an interesting week, almost the reverse of what Alabama did, in that they started with a huge win. I mean, blowing out Kansas at home. But then they turn around and they go to West Virginia and they pick up the loss.
Yeah, but the losing at West Virginia is nothing to be extremely concerned upon. West Virginia will be plenty tough to beat for anyone, let alone when they're at home. They didn't shoot the ball well, and West Virginia took it to them. West Virginia's physical up front. They're tough and they're strong. And Iowa State usually likes to beat people up down low, get a lot of offensive boards and put them back and get easy buckets. But West Virginia boxed out and they were tough down low and they didn't allow Iowa State to have that happen to them. And they ran into a buzzsaw Saturday afternoon in Morgantown. The crowd was all over it. The students were in and on top of them. And I don't think it's anything to worry about Iowa State. I think their team is great. Otzelberger is doing a fantastic job. They have all the pieces they need, but I think they just ran into a rough spot Saturday. But saying that about West Virginia, I'll take those wins up against anybody's. Iowa State at home, at Kansas, Gonzaga and Arizona on neutrals. I don't know if anyone has those four type wins on their resume.
That I love the top of that West Virginia profile right now. Absolutely. Yeah.
It tops out really high, and West Virginia getting into the polls this week, I think, for the first time this year, although they may have been in there earlier. Darren DeVries, I don't know if there's any coach or program that's outperformed its preseason expectations more than this West Virginia team. I don't think any, but we all thought back in October, I think we all thought, I know I thought, that this was just going to be a blah year for them. It didn't look like they had much in the way of personnel, and holy crap, are they? I mean, this is a phenomenally good team.
Oh, Griggs,
his son's been hurt. Wait till they get him.
Yeah,
Salik, actually, let me ask you about another team though. Houston is in first place in this conference. They picked up a tough fought road win over the weekend at UCF. And I get when you look at the profile, kind of like when we look at the Johnnies almost, there's not much at the top of the profile. West Virginia home at UCF, probably better than the Johnnies. But only a few really close losses to some of the best teams in the nation. And the metrics, Torvik thinks they're the number one team in the nation right now.
It was as good as a home loss when you look at the game against Auburn. And obviously nothing to be ashamed of with the Alabama loss, which I think was in Vegas during Thanksgiving. They did survive at UCF, which is a bit of a pest when you look at what they've did to Texas A&M and a couple other teams. Now, there is a game that's scheduled for tomorrow night against Utah. That's going to get pushed back a day or two because of snow. Not in Salt Lake City, but in Houston, who is going to have their biggest snowfall since the Eisenhower administration.
Oh, wow. I had not heard that. Okay. Yeah, breaking news there that Houston-Utah game is going to be pushed back. And then they got to go to Kansas. So they and Kansas and West Virginia road trip. So it's not going to get easy after that.
It won't. But this is sort of the part where we've been hearing it. In doing the brackets each week, I've had Houston way, way down. But I still think that they're the best team in this conference. I think they go to Kansas and win. And I think they win. I actually think they win both of those. And if they do that, like, you're starting to think, okay, now we can have them as a protected seed, maybe as a 2 or a 1. But this is a really, really good Houston team that its profile doesn't show how good they are, but it's about to.
Tytel, welcome back, and I think perfect time to speak about your school, Arizona, who had a bit of a rough trip to Texas Tech over the weekend.
The roller coaster rolls on for Tommy Lloyd. So they left the conference champions, started this year 4-5, won 7 in a row, and they were only down 1 point at Texas Tech with under 8 minutes left on Saturday. And then they got outscored 17-2 the rest of the way. Winnable week ahead, road trip to Oklahoma State, home game against the Buffaloes, and then Iowa State comes to Tucson next Monday. That'll be a true test, obviously. The 3-point shooting remains a huge problem. They only made three against the Red Raiders. They're now bottom 100 in the nation at 32% behind the arc. And the Lithuanian big man, Motiejus Krivas, is out for the year after foot surgery. So his replacement, pressure falls on the shoulders of the Estonian, Henry Vassar. And the good news, when Vassar makes at least one basket, they're 11-1. If he doesn't make a basket, they're 0-5. So make some shots, Henry.
That's quite a stat.
And Dorman, I think part of the story though was this Texas Tech team that actually cracked into the polls in the coaches poll at least this week after that win over Arizona and a road win at K-State and three winnable games ahead. Get some momentum rolling heading into Houston on February 1st.
Yeah, I think this Texas Tech Red Raider team is about to do just what you said. I think they're better than Oklahoma and TCU, and that's a tough test in Cincinnati, but Grant McCaslin has done a really good job. He's got some strong guards. They really played well against Arizona. They held their own. They got back on D. They didn't let Arizona get a lot of easy baskets, and they knocked down the shots, as Tytel said, down the stretch, and Arizona couldn't. But I agree with you. This is a solid Texas Tech team that I think will definitely be in the field come March, and now is just looking to better their seed.
Yeah, one other team that maybe a real brief mention on here, Baylor. A short rotation and they're injured, but still you gotta beat somebody. If you can't beat TCU at home, Griggs, well, you really better beat Kansas State at home this week.
Yeah, I'm not I don't love this team. Not too good away from home, albeit the teams they've played away from home are very, very good. But these are games that if like K-State at home, any tournament team should be able to beat anyone that's nowhere near the bubble at home. I mean, that is a hold serve game. That doesn't even help your profile if you win it. It just sort of dings it if you don't. And then at Utah and at BYU, not easy games to win, but they're road games against teams that are, again, not within reach of the bubble. You got to get one of those. So if they don't win two of the next three, I'm starting to question, do you even select them? Now, again, the bubble is very, very soft right now, so you have to take 68. But I'm not in love with this Baylor team.
Yeah.
Keep in
Real quick.
mind, Utah is not the pushover that they were expected to be either. They're actually hovering around 500. They are 500.
There's Utah on the left. They won round one of the Holy War actually over BYU in an overtime game that you have to have ESPN Plus to watch. But we'll
Yeah,
talk about
a
why was
little
that game not on
frustrating.
TV. But
Yeah,
that's.
BYU and BYU's 10 in, or Utah, excuse me, 10-2 at home. But eight of those wins are quad four. And the other one was against a BYU team that, while is good, is not as good as Baylor, is not good enough to be a tournament team. You got to go to Utah or BYU, and you got to get one of those.
Yeah. Here's the upcoming schedule. The game of the season so far in the conference Saturday, Houston is at Kansas. Finally, we're going to really find out about this Houston team this weekend. But there's a few other really interesting games in there as well. All the going on to Monday night with Iowa State at Arizona. That could be a huge one for Arizona, actually. Let's take a quick look over at the ACC, which would be a lot quicker than these other conferences because it's just not as good. Good, but the top team Dorman is pretty darn good, and that's the Duke Blue Devils. Take care of Miami and win at Boston College this week.
Yes, they look great. They're making these teams look silly out there. They're just getting out to big leads and don't let these teams back in it. I think they're clearly the best team in this conference. It's not even close. Wake Forest, Louisville, and Clemson doing a nice job, only putting up one losses each. We'll see if they can hang in there and keep this up. North Carolina kind of slipping. And like you said, Chad, I am not a big fan of this conference. I just don't see a ton of teams that can even make a run in March outside of Duke.
I'll pull up here, Salika, North Carolina there on the left. Here's Wake Forest on the right. A couple of teams here, maybe going opposite directions. Wake Forest has now won 5 in a row. I get they haven't done anything other than a Michigan neutral court win, but no bad losses, 5 wins in a row. Going the other direction on the left there, North Carolina, home loss to Stanford down in quad three.
Well, we'll find out pretty quickly where Wake Forest is going to stand in the next couple of weeks. They get Carolina and Duke at the Joel, and then they have to make a trip out to Louisville, who, even with their injuries, have still been a very difficult team to knock off home or away. And then you have Pittsburgh and a pesky Stanford team who's been exceeding expectations because we've had no expectations for the Cardinals.
Tytel, Florida State, almost similar to Wake in that there's not much bad there, but nothing good yet, but maybe a few chances, maybe.
Yes, Coach Leonard Hamilton has not won more than 18 games in any of the past 4 seasons, which is amazing right there. He's now 13-5 after double-digit home wins over Pitt and Georgia Tech last week. This week, they head west for winnable games at Cal Stanford that should put them at 15-5. And if you look in Tier 2, man, if they had not blown that road OT game at NC State, this would be a very interesting resume. Sadly, a little under the weather, I think it is. They're getting it done with height. Average height of 6'7" is number 3 in the nation, and they use it on defense, blocking over 5 shots a game, number 15 in the nation. And the biggest X factor, junior power forward Malik Ewen. He started his career at Ole Miss, then he went to junior college and was a first team All-American. Now he's back in D1. He's got 4 straight double-doubles.
Griggs, I'm gonna pull the Pitt Panthers up here on the right. Losers of 4 games in a row, and is it not? I think it's time that for this team to be sweating and sweating a lot here, in my opinion.
Yes, very much so. And none of the losses smell horrible all by themselves, but you add all 4 of them together and they do. I mean, it just sort of accumulates into a problem. And those were certainly games that a tournament team should be able to win at least 1 or 2 of them. I still think that they have a case.
Well, let me ask you, who have they beaten away from home that is solidly in the field?
No one.
And who have they beaten? They've beaten West Virginia, and that's it, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I get Ohio
that's their
State.
profile.
Ohio State looks like the best. I think West Virginia is the
No,
best win, and it was home.
yeah, and I mean that's really all they've got. It's a hold serve bubblicious profile that isn't being anchored down by bad losses, but isn't being elevated by anything that's particularly good. They have winnable games coming up. Syracuse, even though it's on the road, they better win it. North Carolina is probably a tournament team, but they're not the best road team, and they're not the best neutral or home team either. They need to, they need to win that one. So, I mean, if they with the 3 games coming up, if they lose 2 of them, do you even put them in the field
If they
when we
lose
do the bracket that
a
week?
Syracuse game, it's over. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But
The problem with the conference is if you don't, if besides outside of Duke, that nothing is doing anything to really
yeah.
bolster your resume. There's
Well,
nothing that says you're doing anything besides a Duke win.
the
yeah,
only thing you
You're
could do,
right, dormant,
the
so
only
you
thing you
better
could
not be
do.
losing
4 in a row. I mean,
Right.
I think you're furthering the
I
point.
agree.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I think the only thing
I'm
you could
with
do with
you.
this conference is pile up a ton of conference wins, a gaudy
Yep.
record. But
Yeah.
you're right. You don't pick up the key wins. You just pick up so many you can't ignore you.
Yeah.
Upcoming schedule this week. We kind of mentioned that game tomorrow night. North Carolina at Wake Forest, a real bubblicious
Yeah.
game to kind of circle, and then Duke at Wake on Saturday as well.
Big week
Wait
for
for
Wake
Wake.
Forest. Yeah, in a couple of home showcase games against, traditional rivals. A team we didn't talk about that is playing well, although the numbers aren't there, but I think that on the court, this Louisville team's pretty good. I think that they're in the top half of the bracket. I think they're wearing white and around a 64 right now.
Let's jump over to the Mountain West Conference. Stalika, as we record this, actually, New Mexico has taken it to Fresno State, and looking to gain move, I guess, a full game as well, I guess 2 wins, but tied in the loss column ahead of Utah State. But how about this New Mexico team?
Oh, they're going to have the nasty mark just because they lost to San Jose State last Tuesday. That was not a that's also their second Q3 loss, which is not going to help. Now, the one thing that's saving New Mexico right here, they have a pretty gaudy record in Q2. So if we go by one of Rocco's tenets, what are you doing against the top two quadrants, the top three quadrants? New Mexico is still doing fine right now. You don't want to be taking on too many losses. And UNLV has been a red hot team in this conference. You can't be taking them for granted.
Yeah, UNLV had probably the most improbable week of the season. When you consider that they were a million miles away from the NIT and they go out and win road games at Utah State and San Diego State.
Utah State game was a home game.
Oh, Grace. The Utah State game. Other than that, no real surprise. They had no wins outside of Tier 4, and then they go and do that. That's amazing.
Well, Dorman, what about Utah State now? They now have a second blemish on the record, on the resume, but that's one they could probably survive pretty easily, right? The loss at UNLV?
I think they can absolutely survive that one. They might even get a chance in the tournament to play them again on their home court, so they can get that one back possibly. The big one's going to be New Mexico at home in 3-4 games. They need to hold serve. I don't see Nevada at home or Air Force on the road being a huge challenge. Then they get that UNLV team again in New Mexico, but in their building. So Utah State, I think, is in good, solid shape. Those two games are going to be huge. They got to hold serve at home.
Yeah. Well, Tytel, another team coming off a UNLV loss, though, is also San Diego State there on the left. Could they – they're still okay, though. They can absorb that loss, can't they?
Can, but 11-5 is a little underwhelming, I must say. Only 4-4 against the board, only 6-5 against top three tiers. The predictive metrics don't love them, so I would not push the panic button, but I would make sure you knew where it is on the control panel because 11-5 is 11-5.
Well, at Air Force, at Nevada, they better sweep this week.
And then San Jose State and Wyoming at home. They better be on their way to 15-5. If they're not 15-5, then yes, they need to start pressing the panic button. Can we look at another team that is not inside the bubble but is maybe within arm's reach of it? They've been kind of disappointing this year. That's the Broncos of Boise State.
I agree. They've been disappointing. I don't really think they're close to the bubble because they've beaten nobody. And they lost to Boston College. I mean, they got
The Boston College loss.
We'll talk in 3 weeks if they win their next six in a row, Griggs. I think that's where I'm at.
Outside of the SEC, this is just a solid conference. And if they can win two of their next four, Joby's not here.
Real quick, here's the upcoming schedule. Maybe the game of circle is Saturday's New Mexico UNLV game, though. That could be the way UNLV is playing right now. That created
they were shot out of a cannon. I kind of wanted to research this, but as best I could tell, they didn't get any key players back from suspension or injury. This just came out of nowhere.
Over the American and Tytel, was it Memphis kind of doing what they always do, or did Temple suddenly have some life we didn't know about when Temple knocked off Memphis this week?
I mean, I think a lot of people thought Memphis would win this conference and maybe even clinch the regular season by Valentine's Day.
Yes, but, I did.
Coach Adam Fisher said, I'll disagree with that after a 7-point win over the Tigers last Thursday. They lost 20 games last year. They're now in a 4-way tie for first place, for God's sake. Tough road trip to North Texas on Wednesday, then 4 winnable games after that for the revenge game in Memphis on February 9th. And there might not be a more valuable transfer in the country than Jamal Mashburn Jr. Remember his dad, Jamal Sr., 19 points a game during 3 years at Kentucky, fourth overall pick in the NBA draft in 93. Jamal Jr. is living up to those great genes this year. After coming over from New Mexico, he's averaging 21 points a game. He just set a season-high 32 points in a 3-point win over Tulane on Sunday.
Sorry, 1 second here. But Griggs, he mentioned that North Texas team. We got Memphis up there on the left. I'm going to go ahead and I pulled North Texas up here on the right. I got to say, just by virtue of volume of wins, if this team can keep rolling through this conference, is there a path here for the Mean Green?
Very narrow, but yes.
The metrics don't hate them is what I'm kind of saying.
Yeah, the metrics don't hate them. And if they roll through the conference and bloat out that record, let's say that they stumble once the rest of the way, and they finish 25-5, 26-5. Two of those are trash because they're not D1 wins, but you look at the girth of what's going to be in tiers one, two, and three, although not much in tier one, unless they get a win against Memphis. I do think they get a look, and this is the kind of profile that the committee doesn't always take. They didn't take Indiana State last year. But they do look at teams. I mean, sometimes they get in, sometimes they don't. And I know that there's a million variables to that. That's a lot of words to say. Yeah, I do think they have a path. And if they can win out or only lose one between now and the start of the conference tournament, wouldn't we all agree in saying they'd at least be on the bubble or in the discussion?
I agree with you, Griggs. The problem that I see for North Texas, they don't get that chance at Memphis with Memphis at home, which I think is the one team where you can really say you did something in the conference. They're not going to get that opportunity unless it's in the conference tournament
It would be
outside of
in the
the
final.
championship.
I mean, if they win like they need to, they would presumably be in the top. They would presumably be second to Memphis, and they
One,
wouldn't meet
two.
till the championship game anyway.
There's what's the upcoming schedule. Memphis this week is going to be hosting Wichita State and UAB. West Coast Conference time. Dorman, let me go back to you here. Gonzaga had a real crappy week out of the top
Wow.
25 polls.
I
Deservedly so.
yes.
definitely deservedly so. I am stunned. When I saw this team play in the non-conference, I thought this was one of the best Gonzaga teams few had in a long time, at least one of the top few in the last 10 years or so. I just thought the athletes he put and the transfer from Arkansas, Battle, I believe his name is. I just thought he had such great pieces to put together. His big guys were playing well, his guards, he was bringing back so much of a team last year that he had, and I loved that. And then all of a sudden he goes to Oregon State and they lost in overtime. And then they look awful in with Santa Clara over the weekend too at home. I'm really surprised. I do not know what to put my finger on is the problem here, but Mark Few better figure it out and quickly, or they could realistically not make the tournament.
I don't know if it's that dire, but what is the it, whereas West Virginia is totally outperforming where we thought they would be in October, Gonzaga is underperforming. This was a team that we all thought it was as good as some of their Final Four teams. I think we all thought that. A lot of us had them. I forget where we had them in our preseason bracket, but I think a lot of us picked them to go to the Final Four, even before the losses to Oregon State and Santa Clara, which really put the bright spotlight on the problems that they're having. They had missed a lot of opportunities, and again, you don't expect them to win all of those, but you would expect a Final Four caliber team to win more than what they did. Yeah, they're not a protected seed. They're certainly not a one seed, and I don't know if I'd go so far to say that they're going to miss the field, but they're not going to be in the where we thought they would or
Well,
were or could
as
be.
I look at when I look at the resume quickly, though, Greg, they don't have those wins against the Kentuckys, the
Yeah,
UC
they
that they
don't.
usually do. And now
Yeah.
you're looking at Baylor and San Diego State, and those teams are struggling also to get in the tournament. So I don't believe they have those out of conference they can usually hang their hat on now this year.
And it's going to come down maybe to their two St. Mary's games.
Yeah.
If they get swept by the Gales, yeah, it becomes a problematic. But real quick on the Gales though, to Tytel, they've won six in a row here, and I think this team is looking like the best team in this conference.
I think that's accurate. They're 6-0 in conference. A bit of a home court hero at 10-1, but 4-0 on the road is great. Predictive metrics are good. OAR is good. Nebraska and Utah wins are kind of
Must
holding
check.
up, I guess. But yes, I can't imagine that they're going to sweep the Zags, but I couldn't imagine the Zags would lose back to back already. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I mean, Stilica, again, we do have some teams with a little more life. I don't know that anybody else is close enough at the moment, though, between the San Francisco, Washington State, Oregon State, Santa Clara group to get a serious discussion yet.
Not going to be close as far as the NCAA tournament bubble, but when you look strictly at the conference standings, the Dons and Wazoo are still going to be tricky places to visit. San Francisco, still trying to get that breakthrough win against Gonzaga, for example. Washington State is going to be a little bit of a different story here. Now they go to a Santa Clara team that's knocked off the Zags and is going to be on a high.
Yeah, big games this week. Actually, big week for St. Mary's, hosting San Francisco at Washington State. And Gonzaga better win at Portland. I mean, they just
– If Gonzaga does not win at Portland, they should just stay in Portland.
Well, that completes the regular portion of our show. Let's move to the under-the-radar portion, Griggs, as we go to the Atlantic 10 Conference. but in all seriousness, the Dayton Flyers just continued their inexplicable whatever the heck it is that they are doing – losing the home game to George Mason, did bounce back, needed overtime to beat Loyola Chicago.
You want to talk about underperforming and overperforming teams. We've mentioned that Dayton's managed to do both in the same season. They were incredible in November and got into the rankings and were all this big story, and we were praising them and thinking they were going to be a protected seed, not based on any preseason expectations, but based on what they had actually done. And since then, they've done nothing. It's one of the more remarkable. There's been no key injuries. There's been no suspensions. There's been nothing to indicate this kind of a shift from being that good to this lousy. And they are lousy.
Other maybe they're just not that good. But Tytel, let's talk about a couple other teams here. And how about among the four teams with only one loss, how about Duquesne, a team we've mentioned all season?
I don't usually like to discuss teams that are 500, but I'm going to make an exception for Duquesne. Won 25 last year, new coach this year in Drew Joyce III. He's won 7 of his past 8 with just a 6-point loss at Davidson, tied with the conference leader George Mason in the loss column. If you would ask me like 3 weeks ago if they could beat Dayton this Tuesday, I would have given them zero shot. I actually think it could happen now, which is incredible.
Yes, it can.
Lacking a lot of things. Senior leadership, healthy Jake DeMichel, anybody who can make a freaking free throw, etc. They do have a 16-point win over Irvine and a defense that allows just 65 points a game. It is a mistake to overlook this team.
But who's playing best in this conference? I get that George Mason is at the top of the standings, but Dorman, I think this VCU team is really looking good these days.
I do too. That's if I had a chance to repick this one, I would be taking the Rams from VCU. Ryan Odom has done a really strong job here. I think he's got the best team as I see it today, going forward in the A-10. They got a tough couple games here. They're going to Rhode Island, then they're going to St. Louis. St. Louis is my second best team here in the A-10. So I think that'll be a showdown in St. Louis next week. But I'm with you. I think the VCU Rams are right now playing the best ball in the conference.
A bit of a comical story to tell here. For about 10 minutes on the website on Sunday, John Tytel had posted his seed list and I had bracketed it. And by mistake, I had VCU in the first four, not accounting for the fact I had just not been on the lookout for the A-10 auto bid winner to not be inside the bubble. I'm just not conditioned for that. Chad noticed it. We've got it fixed. But while it was a silly mistake on my part and I need to relearn the bracketing rules, apparently, it also is a very real indictment on what this and on how this conference is performing and where the one team that they get in, and it probably only will be one, could end up in the bracket. This is the A-10 isn't always the strongest league, but it's been a long time since it's been this poor.
Here's
there
the upcoming...
was one oddity for VCU. I was going to say there was one oddity for VCU a couple weeks ago when they were hosting Fordham. It was played in front of an empty building because I think there was no water pressure within the city of Richmond that day, and they had to keep fans out of the building because of the very low water pressure. So been a few weird things going on for the Rams this year.
VCU is at Rhode Island hosting the Bonnies this week. George Mason at St. Bonaventure, tough road test for the quote-unquote first-place team, their only game this week. That does complete all our games, though, and so let's run right over to final thoughts. And Tytel, we're going to start off with you because I know you need the screen share.
So my final thought is about the entire Florida Gator coaching staff led by these two, I would say gentlemen, but wait till you hear what I have to say. So remember the good old days 4 months ago when the Gators were just, you know, preparing for the season ahead. Since then, we've seen a Title IX complaint filed against head coach Todd Golden on the right. Includes allegations of sexual exploitation, sexual harassment, and stalking. Last Tuesday, a sexual assault complaint was filed against assistant coach and two-time NCAA champ Torian Green, on your left, by a Florida Athletic Department employee alleging that he kissed her last March and tried to put his hand down her pants. On the court, this team has looked great. Arguably the most impressive win of the season of anybody, 30-point win over a then-undefeated Vols team a couple weeks ago, and only two losses to Kentucky and Mizzou by a combined 7 points. But off the court, I know they're innocent until proven guilty, but how many more allegations must we wait for until the women of Gainesville can feel safe again?
Ouch. Yeah, not a good situation going on there in Florida off the court at all. Stalika.
A little hard to transition from that, but I will go ahead and give a couple score updates as we're recording here. Rutgers and Penn State tied at 24 in a classic Atlantic 10. I mean, Big 10 matchup right
No, that's an A-10 matchup, then, absolutely. Yeah. If we get to back the A-10, we'd have a good conference, too.
Yeah, back when the A-10 was 10 teams. But you've also got Villanova leading Georgetown at half, 34-27, even without one of their three big guys in Wuga Poplar, who got ejected in the first half for a flagrant two. So not a good sign on MLK Day.
Yeah, no. But New Mexico just putting the finishing touches on Fresno State, so there's something good for one of these teams at least. Dorman.
I was trying to hold off on this team until under the radar, but I couldn't do it after the last two games anymore. The hierarchy at University of Wisconsin-Green Bay decided it would be a fine idea to hire Doug Gottlieb and let him keep his nationally syndicated radio show daily on the air, let him do the show, and they hired him, knowing that, to be their head basketball coach. I don't have to tell anyone watching this show how much time and effort and sweat and tears it takes to be a D1 coach, and especially then of a head coach, because of everything they have to do off the court. It is so much time. It is so much to put all this together. Then they decide they would let him have this radio show, which is another full-time job. Doug Gottlieb has never been a Division I basketball coach. So this is the first time he's ever gone through this, and he has another job on the side. The whole year has been a complete disaster. The hierarchy needs to look at it and say, you know what, we screwed this up. They have got to put an end to this, either him or the radio show. The last two games, Wisconsin had a 17-point lead in the first half against Robert Morris. Robert Morris won by double digits. And then over the weekend, Wisconsin-Green Bay played our Penguins, Youngstown State. They had an 11-point lead with 9 minutes to go, and the Penguins won by four. The whole season's a disaster. Wisconsin-Green Bay athletic director botched this. They need to make a change.
No, you meant Morris Robert, right, Chad?
Yeah. Sorry. He didn't mean Morris Robert, though. We can have that confirmed here. I'll try to get that confirmed while Griggs, we go to you. There it is.
Yeah,
Morris Robert. Yeah. Morris Robert University.
Number 23 is confused.
Yeah, he put the wrong jersey on. For
I
some
got
reason.
It.
All right. I should crop that out. Griggs, go ahead, finish off the show.
In the case, especially around the Midwest, I guess, there's been a lot of weather issues. But it was disappointing to see that the Ohio State and Purdue game, which was supposed to be tonight, was delayed. And I can't figure out why. I checked the weather. It is very cold up in Purdue, but Ohio State had every opportunity to get there. I just don't understand why they're not playing the basketball game tonight.
Maybe there's a travel issue or something. I don't know. I want to thank everybody for joining us here. This has been our Hoops and Tea Report. We'll be back Wednesday night with an Under the Radar, Sunday night with our next Bracket Rundown show. But on behalf of David Griggs, David Dorman, John Slica, John Titel, I'm Chad Sherwood. That's my cat back there again. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again real soon.